Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your episode for Tuesday, February 27th. And is it time to start talking about next year already? This is your host, Matt Shook, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt underscore Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. And also at the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a follow there and also give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. You can commiserate there at the Facebook page with other Pistons fans as we try to make some sense of the rest of the season and probably talking all offseason about what to do going forward. We're going to be breaking down the Pistons' latest loss, another road blowout of the back-to-back variety on Monday night against the Toronto Raptors in the Great White North. And we'll be talking about an interesting column that Vince Ellis wrote that I saw after the game on Monday from the Free Press. Vince Ellis had some words about the Blake Griffin trade and what it means for the Pistons' future. I'm also going to be pointing at some other articles and podcasts out there that I've found recently and what they're saying about the Pistons. Michael Snyder of Detroit Bad Boys, Nate Duncan, along with some other folks out there talking about the Pistons and what some of the things that they had to say about where this team is at right now. But the Pistons lost 123-94 to the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors had 31 assists on their 42 made field goals. Pistons fall to 28-32, four games under 500 and three full games behind the Miami Heat for the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Pistons were soundly beaten by a better team on the second half of a back-to-back. In and of itself, you watch that game, and it's not really something to get all worked up about, given that the singular nature of that game, but of course in a larger context, given the playoff implications and all that, just another frustrating night for the Pistons fans who lost 6 of 7 with that game. It's a schedule loss if there ever was one, but a team that can't afford any of those and needs to have the urgency of every single game the rest of the season if they hope to claw back into the Eastern Conference playoff hunt. But I mean, like I said, a back-to-back, you go to Charlotte, you fly into Toronto, you got to clear customs. It was, you know, it's the frozen tundra of Canada, so it was probably negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit or Celsius, whatever they use up there outside or something like that, and all the moose walking around the streets. It's a distraction. To be sure, anytime you go up in Canada, as we know as Southeastern Michigan people that have been there a couple of times and know what we've seen in the movies, we know Canada from those kind of things. But the Pistons actually played well in the first half. I'll go out and say that, trailing by 6 at the half. Andre Drummond had some real bounce in his step, especially early on. He finished with 18 points and 8 rebounds. The team, like I said, trailed by 6 at the half because the bench got outplayed, as it does in the second quarter. But it, all in all, I mean, it sounds dumb, but in the first half, it really was a team that you can be proud of, that Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons threw out there. But again, this is the best team in the Eastern Conference. They got soundly beat by a team that was coming off of a loss and coming off of the All-Star break itself, where they've been at home since the All-Star break. So really a team that was a dangerous one to run into on this night. Blake Griffin played with the bench in the second quarter, kind of a new wrinkle for Stan Van Gundy. It did not work out very well at all. Another change was that Dwight Bikes was back in the rotation on the second day of a back-to-back. You might see why he'd go with the fresh legs as opposed to Jameer Nelson there, who's been pretty much awful since being acquired by the Pistons at the trade deadline. Anthony Tolliver, by the way, it just seems like he doesn't quite have the legs anymore that he had in November. It was kind of predictable. One of those things that you could kind of see coming. We talked about this a lot early on in the season, that maybe it's Anthony Tolliver's time at the beginning of the year, and that maybe Henry Ellenson would be ready to step up into more of the rotation in the second half of the year. Obviously, for numerous reasons, that hasn't happened. One A and one B being Ellenson's inability to play defense at an NBA level right now, but that's a black mark on the coaching staff in the front office, that they drafted a guy a couple years ago who still is nowhere near being ready to compete at a high level for a team hoping to get in the playoffs, even in the second half of the year, even after getting pretty much the first half of the season off. So, you know, chalk that one up as an L so far for the Pistons. But hot three-point shooting early on for the Raptors, despite the Pistons' nice energy early on, pretty much kept the Pistons at bay. And that pretty much continued throughout as the Raptors shot well. But you can't just chalk that up as the reason or something that you can't do anything about as a Pistons team. Obviously, defensively, they have not handled three-pointers very well as a general rule this season. And it's something that the Pistons coaching staff has needed to address and players have needed to address and hasn't happened. The growing pains of watching Blake Griffin as a jump shooter have not been fun. It's just he's just laying bricks out there, and it is pure agony sometimes as a fan, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, have this guy. And I know that Blake Griffin's not the physical player that he was, the physical specimen that he was his first couple years in the league, but all we've heard about Blake Griffin and just to see him turn into a jump shooter and be laying bricks like that, it's maddening and not entertaining to watch at all. And I know that he needs to develop that shot. He needs to keep working on it, needs to keep shooting it from three, and also some of those long twos that we all hate as well. But holy hell, does it just suck now watching him miss those threes and long twos, just a frustrating possession ending with the Blake Griffin miss wide and very long and then just bricks sometimes. But I will echo what George Blaha said during the telecast, reacting to LeBron James's comments recently about the refs protecting the shooters and not the guys going into the lane. I know this is such a Pistons fan thing to say, but it's a man's game. The three-pointers is not what we think of basketball in the Motor City. And I know Stan Van Gundy said something similar early on in the season. The fans, as much as we love watching Steph Curry fill it up, it's just not as entertaining to watch teams throw up three-pointers the rest of the year. And it's an unsolvable problem. And as a team, you got to adjust to it and be able to knock down those threes and figure out ways to defend them and get them open yourself. But it's just, man, is it get a little bit tiresome watching NBA teams just throwing them up time after time. And this is coming from a guy that all I wanted to do when I played basketball was throw up threes when I was out there. But it's, like I said, the right thing to do, obviously, the way this way is going. But it doesn't mean I have to like it, especially when you have like a world-class athlete like Blake Griffin out there, and he's just bricking 17-foot shots wide right that clang off the rim. And along those lines of great athletes, I was just struck by Fred Van Vliet, the old Wichita State player who I saw up close and personal following the Missouri Valley Conference when I lived down in Springfield, Missouri, where Missouri State plays. He just looks like a totally different dude out there. He's like the founding member of the Darren Williams All-Stars of guys who were kind of a little bit chubby in college, but then they get into that NBA nutrition and training programs. And he's just like a slender athletic guy who's giving Dwight Bikes fits on full court defense, not letting him get the inbound pass into there too. JJ Redick's another guy out there who stands out as a guy who just had that doughy body fat in college and just kind of lost it. Kind of like the opposite of the rest of us who went to college, started gaining a little bit of the doughy body fat, and then got out of college and kept that going as the years go on. I guess maybe I'm not everyone out there, but I think there's many of you listening who probably can relate to that. No body fat on any of these guys in the NBA, man. The young guys are just so cut and athletic, not like the old days or even like the going to work days where Ben Wallace just stood out against some of those schlubby guys. You look at some of these guys and it's obvious why playing in this league on a back-to-back is so difficult with teams that take so much care of themselves, especially coming off the All-Star break, and then their ability to be fine-tuned and ready to be humming with their bodies going at tip-off is incredible. On the other end of the spectrum, Ish Smith, I mean, his defense just stands out as being a real problem. It's really bad. Nothing he can do about for a large part of that, pardon the pun there, as he's one of the smaller players in the league regular-wise, obviously. There's just not a place for the little guy right now in the NBA on the defensive end. You got to be so good offensively to make up for some of those shortcomings. Again, pardon the pun. But you see a guy like Kyle Lowry out there who's little too, but he's just so strong. He's too strong on the defensive end for a guy like Ish Smith to handle. DeMar DeRozan, just forget about it. And a guy, you put a guy like OG Anunoby, the Indiana first-round pick that the Raptors have. He just toyed with Ish Smith a little bit sometimes, and looked like Ish Smith looked like a pinball in that third quarter when the Raptors busted out there. I thought that physical difference that Ish Smith doesn't have was apparent in the third quarter. And again, there's nothing you can do about your size, but and there are a lot of things that Ish Smith does well, as I went on and on about yesterday in Monday's podcast. But I'd rather see him out there with the second unit, not getting exposed as much against all-stars like Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan and specimens like OG Anunoby. Throw him out there against some of those other guys, DeLon Wright, who's a very good player, by the way, and some of those other Norman Powell-type guys that the Raptors have on the bench. Maybe Ish Smith might have a little bit more success against them. Throw someone else out there, anybody. I'd rather see Dwight Bikes out there and lose and do some of the things that he did in the second quarter. Obviously, Bikes in the third quarter showed His shortcomings as well, he lost Kyle Lowry immediately when he got into the game in the third quarter, open three-pointer that put it back up to a 20-point deficit. But it's just crazy, and I'll say this again, it's crazy that this Pistons organization hasn't been able to find an athletic defending guard that can get it done on that end in these last few years in the Stan Van Gundy regime, something that, you know, when we write the eulogy on the Stan Van Gundy era, which might be coming sooner rather than later, as we look at this thing from a big picture perspective, it might be something you want to think about, is the Pistons just never were able to get that player who could play defense in the backcourt. Gatavius Caldwell-Pope is obviously the best example of that in the Stan Van Gundy era. And Avery Bradley was supposed to be that guy this year, but didn't really live up to his defensive billing and toughness persona that maybe he was as advertised with the Boston Celtics. But we will see. We will have some more things to talk about, including an interesting article from Vince Ellis of the Free Press that I'm going to talk about in a little bit here. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, then your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want men 18 to 44, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
I was talking to someone about hockey the other day, and the euphemism for ties that is kissing your sister came up the other day, and was reminded of how ridiculous that is. I just wanted to throw an aside out there for the listeners. I mean, think about it. I mean, kissing your sister is supposed to be parallel, congruous to a tie, because it's kind of not that good, but kind of not that bad. And who, in what world, and I don't have a sister, but in what world is kissing your sister kind of not that good, but also kind of not that bad? It seems like something that would just be bad. Anyway, something, some food for thought for you. But to piggyback on the travails of the travel to Canada, the frozen tundra up in Toronto, Keith Langlois of Pistons.com tweeted out at 3:36 a.m. Eastern time, late on Monday night, early Tuesday morning, that the Pistons plane had gotten stuck in the Toronto airport for about 4 hours or so from getting on. They eventually had to get on another plane and left. And he said, like I said, 3:36 Eastern time, that they looks like that they were going to be leaving. So glad that after all those years, I did not become an NBA player. The travel troubles for the Pistons continue. They used to have the round ball one jet, as you remember, but now they fly not commercial, obviously. They've got chartered planes, but they don't have their own plane. They're kind of involved. I believe Delta, they've got a little program where the NBA teams always fly with them on their chartered jets, but not their own plane like they did in the Bill Davidson days back in the day. Talking about the media a little bit more, Vince Ellis had a column in the Free Press, and it starts with a bang. It came out after the Monday loss to the Toronto Raptors. He says, "If it's not clear by now, the Detroit Pistons have moved on to next season," end quote. He talks about the missing the playoffs as an inevitability for the Pistons this year, and noting that the Pistons have 13 of their remaining 20 games on the road. Now, it's actually 13 of their remaining 22 games. They have 22 games remaining. It's a pretty big difference when you mention that. Probably the Free Press probably laid off a copy editor who could have fact-checked that or something. The Free Press, by the way, used to be a great paper, I promise you. I actually learned to read with that paper, but things have changed over the years. 1-9 on the road, as Vince Ellis notes. Vince does a good job covering the Pistons for the Free Press. So the criticism of the paper that I have does not fall under the realm of Vince Ellis. And it's not like it's individual people that have anything to do with it. I used to work for the company that owns the Free Press, Gannett. And through no fault of the people, well, no, I shouldn't say no fault, but through mostly through staffing cuts and whatnot, some of these things have happened. But there's some other issues with the Free Press as well. Maybe we'll get into that some other day. But like I said, Pistons, quoting from Vince's article, 1-9 on the road in 2008 since the calendar turned. That is right, as a fact, by the way. He went on to say, "Front office members and assistant coaches have defeated expressions possibly concerned with job statuses, with most facing expiring contracts on June 30th, end quote. That's the kind of thing I want to see from the beat writers, by the way, is what's that body language like? What's Tim Hardaway's expressions on the bench? It just doesn't seem like when you watch the games, it's obvious that Stan Van Gundy is very much in charge of the Pistons' sideline. I wonder, does he have, I mean, he's such a big personality. He's such a commanding not charismatic guy, but obviously Stan Van Gundy is the one in charge, as he should be, on the sideline. But it's just strange that, considering when you also throw into the mix that he's the team president as well, as he's a guy who needs as much help as possible, he doesn't have those veteran assistant coaches, those guys that have been with him throughout his entire career. He doesn't have that voice, you know, maybe an older guy or a well-thought-of assistant. And I'm sure Tim Hardaway and those guys are up-and-comers and doing a, you know, whatever they're assigned to do, but it doesn't, the fact that he doesn't have that, you know, Lawrence Frank from some of those successful team days and all the coaches that came up through Greg Popovich, you never really hear of a Stan Van Gundy assistant coach getting pillaged by other teams like some of the other great coaches over the years. Just something to think about that with a guy who's stretched so thin in some ways, especially front office and coaching wise, he doesn't have that strong personality. Whereas Jeff Bauer kind of seems to be that in the front office, and Pat Garrity and some of those other guys seem to do that. Doesn't seem like on the bench there's a lot of guys that are pulling Stan Van Gundy in certain directions. And at the end of the column, Vince Ellis raised the issue about whether Stan Van Gundy will be around to see this offseason and next training camp when Blake Griffin and hopefully Reggie Jackson are able to see if they can meld something together with the team. So an interesting column from Vince Ellis, kind of throwing away the rest of the season and talking about how this team was built for 2018-19, which is certainly something that we did not hear. And you wouldn't hear a front office or team talk about something like that publicly. But when the trade happened, that certainly wasn't what the media was saying. Certainly wasn't what fans were talking about amongst ourselves on Twitter and everything like that. It's interesting to read about this team being discussed this way in such stark terms like that. It wasn't what I was expecting when they make the trade. You certainly can have trades energize you. We see it pretty much in every sport. And I understand that there's, especially with a unique player like Blake Griffin thrown into a unique roster like the Pistons, there's going to be some pitfalls along the way. And we're seeing those in a night in and night out basis with this horrendous team right now. But and we saw how the Pistons played so well with the first week of the Blake Griffin experiment after the trade. Now, I know that those were against lesser foes and at home for the most part. But what about the LA Clippers? Since those new players arrived, some familiar faces from the Pistons about a month back, the Clippers are 6-2, working their way back into the Western Conference playoffs. And they're now four games over 500 and just one game out of the playoffs. So pretty much the transformation that Pistons fans had hoped that they would make after the Griffin trade themselves. Certainly not happening here in Detroit. I read that today, tonight after the game, and I just kind of, it struck me as something that I think Pistons fans should take a look at and think about. That this season, and if you read Vince Ellis's column, and it's probably right, by the way, watching the team and looking at the tough schedule ahead, this season's probably over, and it's time to start thinking about 2018-19. I think that, as I've said before, Stan Van Gundy's got some work to do to save his job going into next season. There has to be some kind of progress made, and we'll see what this team looks like if Reggie Jackson comes back healthy. And that's the other bit of news from Monday, is that Stan Van Gundy in the pregame scrum with the media mentioned how he hopes that Jackson will be back to practicing soon, and that maybe they will have him back for that six-game road trip out west that's coming up. So, and maybe at the full practice court by then. They showed on the telecast some highlights of Reggie Jackson working out before the game, doing some hard planning on his foot as he's kind of walking a little bit and shuffling back and forth, doing some lateral movement on that right ankle. So something to obviously keep an eye on if you're a Pistons fan. Even if you agree with Vince that this season is over, for all intents and purposes, you're definitely interested to see what Reggie Jackson's return to the lineup, when and if it comes, what that does the Pistons, if they're able to roll off some wins, or at least look pretty good at times with their quote-unquote big three back intact. So we will see, to be continued on that front, but we're going to be talking about some other interesting notes from the media that I've saw over the last few days that I wanted to pass along to you guys. But there's another team to be following. They're in the offseason right now in the Detroit city, a new coach coming to the Detroit Lions, and you should be Locked On Lions with host Matt Derry of Detroit Radio. Check that one out every day, and you should also check out the other NBA podcasts that we have, one for every NBA and NFL team, here on the Locked On Network, your team every day. few things for Pistons fans to check out on the interwebs. Michael Snyder of Detroit Bad Boys. I thought he had a really good version of his The Closeout feature on Monday on the Detroit Bad Boys SB Nation site. The title was Back to the Drawing Board, looking at a lot of the plays that the Pistons are running, a lot of the things breaking down the film from the particularly the Celtics and Hornets game right after the All-Star break, so not some of the Toronto stuff, but a lot of clips in there of Ish Smith getting toasted defensively and just outright lack of creativity on offense. Michael referenced the Keith Langlois article from Pistons.com about how Stan Van Gundy was looking for different sets and throwing a few different things in over those couple days of practice he had. And like me and many Pistons fans noted that there's not really much there in terms of ways to get the offense going. So kind of a disheartening look there, but you should check that one out. And then Nate Duncan, who does the Dunked on Basketball podcast, which, by the way, similar name to our network, which is named after our founder, David Locke, the Utah Jazz radio guy. Maybe I should start a Shooked on Hoops podcast or something like that. But Nate Duncan does the podcast with Danny LaRue most of the time. Those guys are in the weeds, really. You got to be a pretty big basketball fan to keep up with those guys and the things that they talk about. But he had Nate had Dylan Murphy, a G League scout and coach, on, I believe, at a podcast that was dropped on Monday. They talked about Blake Griffin at the end of the pod and how he's fitting in with the Pistons and about how, you know, how Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin are going to need some time to adjust to each other in the low post and how they move off of each other. For instance, if Blake Griffin is posting up and makes a move towards the baseline, then that means that Drummond's got to cut towards the middle and vice versa, just things like that that maybe Drummond isn't used to and hasn't really played with a post player by his side maybe since the Greg Monroe days. But they had the two, Dylan and Nate Duncan, had a bit of a disagreement about where Blake Griffin is as far as being a hugely impactful post player at this point in his career. It's worth a listen. I mean, it's jarring to me. I don't know if jarring is the right word, but watching Blake Griffin with the Pistons, certainly not obviously not the guy that he was when he was 23 or 24. But again, I agreed with some of the Pistons fans that talked about how he just looked really tired before the All-Star break, and probably this week off would do him a lot of good. But maybe it's just not there anymore. Maybe the athleticism. And again, we're not expecting Blake Griffin to be the high flying guy, and certainly nobody expects that. But just the ability to have a lot of energy, 32 minutes that he's out there. During the game, you know, the enthusiasm, it looks like he'd rather be anywhere else than playing basketball. And maybe that's a Detroit thing. Maybe that's being traded to the Detroit Pistons at this point. Maybe this is the basketball purgatory. Maybe you're listening to the podcast of basketball hell. Who knows? But maybe we will, and maybe there's some Clippers fans out there. I'm going to reach out to Lucas Han, who was our guest last week on Locked On Pistons. He hosts the Locked On Clippers podcast. I mean, does Blake Griffin just look like he'd rather be doing anything else than playing basketball while he's playing basketball? I don't know. Maybe you guys know. Maybe you can reach out to me on Twitter and let me know. But also, Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue did a podcast. It was called 15 and 60. Talked about all the teams in the Eastern Conference. Talked about the Pistons at length a little bit there. And the main theme of their conversation about the Pistons was, oh crap, 4 more years of Blake Griffin at that contract for the Pistons sounds like a long time. And I got to agree with them with the early returns so far about how things have gone since the trade. They also recently did a podcast about the top centers in the NBA. They both had Joel Embiid first. And Karl-Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert were the next couple. And then they both kind of had Andre Drummond in a tier with like likes of Al Horford, Nikola Jokic, and then maybe just outside of that tier into the next group of centers above guys like Steven Adams and DeMarcus Cousins, taking into account Cousins' Achilles injury. So interesting to have them talk about Drummond. They had some really positive things to say about Drummond. Again, I know Drummond has taken a lot of crap over the years because this team has struggled while he's been their best player, and he still is their best player. I think it's pretty obvious from watching Drummond and Blake Griffin as teammates so far this experiment for the Pistons. But lost in all of this is another pretty strong game by Andre Drummond. He does a lot of things extremely well on the basketball court. There will always be some things that he doesn't do well. And if you're a negative Pistons fan or someone who just has their bug up their butt about Andre Drummond and always will, you're going to point to those things, and I understand that, and that's probably a disagreement that we'll never have a resolution to, but just another impressive performance by the All-Star they're really 18-18 again, showed some energy early, and does everything that you would hope of to ask your star player to do, and knocking down his free throws this year too as well. But the Pistons at home on Wednesday night against the Milwaukee Bucks, and then on the road this weekend, going to the Sunshine State in Florida, playing Orlando on Friday night in a game that obviously is more than a must-win at this point. And then Miami at Sunday, that's the team they're chasing, the team they need the tiebreaker over. Really a make-or-break game as far as the season goes at this point. They got to take at least two out of three of these three games, Milwaukee, Orlando, and Miami, preferably with Milwaukee being one of those wins. Or I think if they don't get two wins out of those two, out of those three, I think we can pretty much call it a wrap on this season at this point as far as playoff possibilities. So thanks for listening, everyone. We're going to be talking about the Bucks coming up on Wednesday. I got a couple of guests possibilities coming up in the next few days, one that I'm very excited about, and a couple, not that maybe you can guess which one it is after the fact, but a couple others that might be coming up as well. But we'll be talking about those Bucks. And give us a follow on the Locked On NBA Network at Locked On NBA Net, the Twitter handle there, and also give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-Match Show. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.